Welcome to Fantasy Focus. Today's podcast is presented by Geico. You can watch us every weekday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on ESPN's Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube feeds, as well as the ESPN app. And you can download Fantasy Focus wherever you get your podcast. Happy Thursday, October 14th. Field Mike and Stefania here. Daniel will join us in just a few moments. We've got a big show today previewing Thursday Night Football. Mike is wearing his Eagles Kelly green as they host the Buccaneers. Stefania will give us injury updates, and of course, we'll talk about wide receiver, cornerback matchups, upgrades, downgrades, and everything in between. Mike, good morning. How are you?
Morning. I'm good. Eagles good? Playing tonight.
How do you feel, confidence-wise?
Do you want my objective answer or you want my fan answer?
Both. I'm assuming they're the same, because if you're a real analyst, you would be objective in both regards.
Yeah, how about this? I'll save my objective answer for when we pick the score later on in the show. My fan answer is, you know, they got this. I mean, they're at home. Jalen Hurts has been up and down, but he's just getting better. He only has a handful of starts. The defense is playing well. I mean, Tom Brady's not 100%.
Right.
They have, you know, they're on a short week. They want to just take it easy on this Thursday night. So I'd say Eagles by 50, I would say.
Eagles by 50. Seems about right. Stefania, good morning to you. How are you this morning?
I'm good, Field.
Okay. Big one tonight for your Giants, too. Big one.
Yes, and we are not talking about the New York Football Giants. We, of course, are talking about the San Francisco Giants, who are going into Game 5 and hopefully are going to move on, because it's only right. They had the best record in baseball for the majority of the year. I know. The Dodgers were close, but they've been there recently. So it's at home. We got
your ace on the mound.
Yeah, we got our ace on the mound. It's our park. Go Giants.
Okay, there you have it. Go Giants, and of course, go Evan Longoria. Love to see him just go yard tonight, because he's the man. Let's get right into some injury updates, Stefania, and we got to be a little positive on this show every once in a while, and we're talking injuries. T.Y. Hilton is returning, or has returned to practice, I should say, for the Colts.
He has, and remember that very early in the year, he was placed on injured reserve because of a neck issue that seemed to come up out of nowhere. He actually had a procedure done on his neck, a relatively minor one, for him to be able to return to practice just a few weeks later. So very encouraging. Not sure yet what this means for availability as early as this week, but stay tuned. They'd love to have another pass catcher out there. It would at least create distraction for the defenses to have to deal with T.Y. Hilton as well.
And as we all know, he owns the Houston Texans. If you go back and look at his numbers against Houston, it is ridiculous. And I know that people will probably tell you that could be nothing more than coincidence. Teams change a lot over the years. One thing has not changed. T.Y. Hilton has owned the Texans. The Colts are kind of like the Browns in this regard. Carson Wentz threw for 402 yards on Monday night, and yes, got a nice game out of Michael Pittman, and yes, had the long touchdown pass, even if it was negative air yards, to Jonathan Taylor. But like, this team does not necessarily have like a guaranteed saturation of targets and catches every single week like the Browns. They can throw for 350, and it might just be that 10 different players catch a pass.
And it might be worse now, because you bring in Hilton, you probably move Paris Campbell to the four spot,
sure,
but he's going to be worked in. You know, Zach Pascal will lose some work too. You'll work in Hill, and you might lose a couple targets for Pittman too.
Right.
And it's not like the tight ends are dominating the targets. There's not much room to drop there. So it might be even worse now.
Look at Mike. We were trying to be positive for like 1 minute on the show.
Yeah, geez. You brought Mike. It up. I'm just adding some context to
you could talk about
delivery.
The Eagles winning by 50, and then you have to get objective on us. Maintain your homerism for a second.
I'm just trying to help you out, man. All right. I'll be quiet. Go ahead.
No. We want your insight still. Stefania, let's go to Miami. Well, almost to London. I think they fly across the pond today.
I think they leave tonight.
There you go. The Dolphins designated Tua Tagovailoa from return, or he returned to practice, which I'm sort of, it's two technically different things,
right,
but they're
right.
Obviously the implication is that he could play on Sunday. Do you expect that to be the case?
More and more I do. I was questioning whether that would really happen, but when we saw what he was doing last week, and even though he only returned to practice this week, the things he was doing, the work he was doing on the side, the regular throwing, it showed that he had much improved from the multiple rib fractures, which caused him to be placed on IR originally. Now, the thing with this injury is that you're still going to have pain for a while. And Brian Flores, when he was talking to reporters yesterday, said as much. He's still dealing with some discomfort, but he talked about Tua's toughness. And really it comes down to, did they think he could do the job? And what they were seeing from him back in practice early is they believe he can. Brian Flores is very optimistic that Tua will be the one who leads them this weekend in London.
That's good news for Tua, certainly. And he was playing okay prior to his injury. Mike, he was not lighting the world on fire. We know with Tua, basically, if he's not playing at Justin Herbert level, it doesn't matter, right? It's just going to make Dolphins fans mad that they didn't take Justin Herbert. It's going to make them think they need to draft or trade for a quarterback this offseason. But let's talk about what it means for the pass catchers, if anything, because I'm not sure you want any piece of this offense other than Miles Gaskin, Mike Gesicki right now.
Yeah, and look, I mean, Tua was a guy I love taking late-round flyers on, so if you're in trouble at the quarterback spot, and look, if you have Russell Wilson and you just lost him, Tua's probably out there in a lot of leagues. If he's not in an IR slot, he's probably out there. You could throw that dart. I mean, this is still a guy that has a ton of talent, and remember what they were working on in the offseason, right? Vertical throws, right? And that's what you want in fantasy, right? Get the ball downfield, make some big plays, and, you know, we'll see. He had a couple touchdowns in week one, and that was in a tough situation there, right? They were in, if I recall correctly, were in New England,
yeah,
I mean, against a good defense. So, yeah, he had a decent start, got hurt, and he still has pretty good skill guys around him. I'll have Will Fuller back in a few weeks, hopefully, but for now, if Parker plays, Waddle, Gesicki, Gaskin to the backfield, I mean, I know the O-line's a weak spot, but
yeah,
if you're in a tough spot at quarterback, it's worth a lottery ticket. He could still be a really good player in this league.
That's the only part that I do worry about with the vertical passing game is that the offensive line's so bad right now that, like, you might have the fastest, or I don't know what the fastest, but you have one of the fastest wide receivers in football right now with Jalen Waddle, which is great. Problem is, he can't run 40 yards down the field in like 2 seconds, which is about how much time Tua is often getting, or Jacoby Brissett for that matter, with that offensive line playing the way that it is. Tua is available at about 75% of leagues at last check. So he's a quarterback to consider if you roster Russell Wilson. Stefania, we have not seen Julio Jones since week 3. Is there a chance we could see him in week 6?
Sounds like it. He was back in practice on Wednesday, and obviously a hamstring injury for both he and A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown returned last week, although was limited somewhat in how much he was utilized in the offense. And I would expect that could be the same scenario for Julio Jones if he's back in business for the Titans this week. You know, it's interesting. They play on Monday night, so he has another extra day of recovery time. But the fact that he was out there is a great sign. He was doing all rehab work before. We're not privy to a lot of that, but you assume that before they get back in practice, some of the things they're doing is getting them running full speed and putting them in situations where they can test the hamstring before they then incorporate football activity. So he's obviously met some hurdles to now be reintroduced to practice. Again, it's a scenario where if you have A.J. Brown and Julio Jones on the field, it makes it a lot more difficult for the Buffalo Bills to anticipate who might be a threat to catch the ball, even if he's not 100% at game time.
And the Bills are a freight train right now. The Bills are now leading the NFL in both points per game scored and, more importantly for this Julio Jones conversation, points per game allowed. Mike, is stay away for you, even if Julio by Sunday, because you're going to have to make a decision, obviously, by Sunday, if you're contemplating Julio or somebody else. There's really no one to pivot to on the Titans. But Julio Jones, how confident are you? Let's say he is playing against a really, really good Bills defense right now.
I mean, I always say it depends on your options, I guess. But if you have a similar option, right, a guy in that vicinity, I would go the other direction and play it safe. To your point, really tough matchup. I mean, his only possible saving grace here is if, you know, the Bills are in the same spot we are. They don't know for sure if he's playing. And I'm assuming they're planning on Tre'Davious White shadowing A.J. Brown. I mean, Jones is out. That's pretty much a lock. If Jones plays, at least maybe he just bounces around. It's not full time. But you would have to imagine Tre'Davious White sitting there now, maybe right now at this moment, watching A.J. Brown tape planning to follow him around in this game. So if he does do that, if they stick with that plan, even if Jones is a surprise activation, then, you know, that's helps him, of course, because they're not going to be throwing to Brown as much, opens the door for Jones. So a couple of things to weigh. But again, if your situation is you have a lot of similar receivers, you can just cross them off, go another direction.
Unscripted here, so apologies for putting this on you out of nowhere, Mike. But I've had a lot of people that have been asking me about A.J. Brown recently. What do you do? And I, you know, the hard part is we often use this refrain. When you've got a guy who's a star, who's not playing like a star, he's playing like an average player. Like, he's not giving you nothing. This is not Odell, right? Odell is, I truly believe right now, unplayable until he proves that he can be, until the Browns offense proves it can support him in a way that makes him fantasy relevant week to week. A.J. Brown, though, like, you have to play him. Because he's A.J. Brown and he can be, this is a player that we thought had a chance to be the number one wide receiver in football if things went his way this year. So what would your advice be to somebody who has A.J. Brown? And I know that there are a million different considerations, so just speak as generally as you can.
I think you bet on prime talent, high volume, pedigree. I mean, this guy is in his prime years. And remember, last year, the season started off kind of similar, right? Now, we're a little deeper in than we were last season, but the season's also a week longer this year. And he missed some action early in the year, slow start. And then he was a top 10 fantasy receiver the rest of the season, right? The good news is the target share is still there. You know, he's still in that 23 to 25% range. I don't expect that to change once Julio Jones is a full go. They don't really have other players to throw to. I mean, Chester Rogers is their slot right now. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not really using the tight end. And also the offense is starting to score a little bit. Again, slow out of the gate, starting to score some points. We've seen them spike at times. So I think there's reason for optimism. If I have him on my roster, I'm holding. I'm not trading low on a player like A.J. Brown. Okay?
Yeah, the only circumstance I could see that would be if you're 1-4 right now, and this is like your make or break inflection point of your season, and the other cards you have to play simply aren't available. I'm trying to think of a good example of a player, and like the first one that came to mind was like, let's say I had A.J. Brown and you had Jamar Chase, and I offered you A.J. Brown for your Jamar Chase. Would you give me Jamar Chase for A.J. Brown?
I think I would, just because, I mean, it's close enough.
Okay.
I mean, it's in the vicinity. That's close. I mean, Chase is playing at a high level, and I think his volume will only increase. Remember, Joe Burrow's like, what, 24th in pass attempts right now?
Right.
I mean, they've had really good game scripts for the run. They are a run-heavy offense. It's going to limit him a little bit, but he's just shown he's just going to keep ascending.
Saying you prefer, but I said if I gave you, I offered you A.J. Brown for your Jamar Chase.
I would go Chase.
So you prefer Chase.
Yeah, I think it's on the line where you can go the other direction, but I mean, much deeper than that, I don't think so. Okay. I mean, Brown's just too good and the usage is there and it's not going away. He's going to keep playing. But honestly, I think if you're in that position where you're struggling and you need to wins, maybe you can go to that guy who has A.J. Brown and try to trade low on, you know, get him at a discount. You know, I think you could try to do that. And then if he gets going, suddenly you have an ascending asset on your team and it helps you make a run. I mean, I think that's a good strategy.
I'll throw one more at you. And these are all off the cuff here. Tyler Lockett, who good for two games, not good for three games, now has a new quarterback for some period of time. Let's call it three games because they have a bye as well. And maybe more, but let's call it three. Would you make that move? Would you trade? If I offered you A.J. Brown and you had Tyler Lockett, would you accept or would you decline?
I would lean the Lockett side. I mean, I pointed out A.J. Brown was a top 10 fantasy receiver last year. So was Tyler Lockett. I mean, he was drafted this year, right? Yeah, fair enough. But maybe, you know, we have to adjust, obviously. And sure. I think they're similar. They're close enough that you don't have to mess with it, right? Because, I mean, look, honestly, with Brown, the only concern so far is he's missed a lot of time. You know, he's been an in and out. He's questionable a lot. He's missed games. That makes me a little bit nervous. You don't want to see that. You hope he gets healthy, plays a full season. But, I mean, that's really the only concern. The volume and the talent are there. And Ryan Tannehill's been one of the best quarterbacks in the league since he took over. I know he hasn't been that effective this year as in the last year and a half, but we know he has it in him.
Yeah, it's interesting because for those that are saying, okay, so, like, you know, you are not preventing me from trying to trade A.J. Brown, but you're telling me that, like, don't give him away. What are the reasons for optimism? Well, obviously, he's A.J. Brown. That's a huge part of the optimism. He's a really, 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 really talented player. Incredibly fast, strong, big. He checks a lot of the boxes. Two, Mike mentioned the target share, 23 to 25%. Is that what you told me?
Yeah, always in that range, sometimes higher if they're running a lot.
So let's call it about 23% to be, even if we're going worst case scenario. That's still a big number, over one-fifth of the targets. And here's what I think you're banking on, Mike, is that you mentioned Tannehill has been so good. He's been so efficient since he took over for the Titans. For one reason or another, it has not happened so far this year. Maybe it doesn't happen on Monday night because they play the Bills, but maybe this is just like faith in 12 weeks after this week could very much paint a different picture than the first 6 weeks, and we'll look back and laugh about that time that we were concerned with A.J. Brown. This is, I think, honestly, if you're keeping him, some of it's just trust. It's just trusting the process and believing in the talent, which I know is not what you want to hear right now when you're 2-3 or 1-4 down in your luck because one of your top three draft picks is playing like a guy that can be easily replaced in your fantasy lineup.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are probably dealing with something like Emmanuel Sanders and Dawson Knox or Dalton Schultz for a player like A.J. Brown, that kind of situation. And I would still lean to the Brown side of that, right? If it's another receiver one, fine. That's fine. But in that scenario, I would stick with Brown.
I want you to know that we hear you. I want you to know that we are with you out there if you have A.J. Brown in your roster. I want you to know that, like, sometimes the answer is got to have a little faith, Daniel. Let's do a preview. You want to? Game preview, preview, preview. Thank you, Daniel Knapp. Great job by you. Tom Brady, he is second on my board, fifth on Mike's board, which begs the question that we've been asking for years. Why does Mike Clay hate Tom Brady?
I mean, he doesn't run the ball. I mean, he hasn't won a Super Bowl in months. You know?
That's true.
Like, that's true. What is going on here?
That's really a great point.
Ridiculous.
He's hurt.
He's hurt.
I'm just giving you fuel for the fire, Mike. But to be honest, he was on the injury report, right? Because of his right thumb, which he's had taped this week. It's a little spica wrap. It basically elevates your thumb, gives it a little support. But the Tampa Bay Buccaneers did not practice this week. On a short week, teams often don't. So everything was estimations. But they listed him as an upgrade to full participation. So he would have been able to practice in full. He's been saying all along he expected to go. I think Tom Brady will be just fine. He also continued to play despite injuring his thumb and appeared to be no worse for the wear.
Yeah, he'll be fine, as Stefania just told you. And really, like, I don't want you to make any sort of take other than let's just put our belief behind Tom Brady. You got him at five, I have him at two. We both think he's an absolute must-start. You have to expect a huge night from Tom Brady. He's been a top four quarterback in three of the past 4 weeks. And Mike, here's the part that I think is worth noting, is that this Eagles defense can be had in a major way. I think the cornerback play is solid. I think the interior defensive line play is potentially excellent. But there are a lot of question marks besides that on this Philly defense. Last week, they were a little bit better, but it was not looking good for the first half against the Carolina Panthers, and some of that was self-inflicted. But still, like, this defense has been, it's been a topic of conversation, to put it lightly, in your favorite city of Philadelphia.
Yeah, it's really interesting, and I'll get more into this later, but they're operating a very zone-heavy offense, the most zone-heavy offense in the league, or defense, excuse me, which is the opposite of last year. We used to talk about how, like, Darius Slay's numbers look so bad because he was man one all the time, and they were just attacking the corners, and they had no help, right? That was going on for years in that defense. So we've seen a change this year, but it has worked. Like, they've only allowed one top 13 fantasy quarterback performance this season. That was Patrick Mahomes, of course. That was
right.
Really, Mahomes to Hill is the only thing that's bit them this year. Otherwise, they've at least contained everyone. And again, I'll talk about that more once we get to the wide receiver. So, you know, maybe it is a game where it's just like, you know, Brady's chugging along and just ends up with one or two touchdowns and it's an okay day. And I, you know, look, he's the number one scoring quarterback. I have him fifth on my board. I knocked him a little bit for the matchup because the Eagles, you know, I do think they're doing a good job in this scheme. But at the same time, he's a number one scoring quarterback, so you're starting Tom Brady.
You are starting Tom Brady and doing so with great confidence. We finally, maybe, possibly, have a running back that is consistent in Tampa Bay.
Yes.
It's been a long time.
which means it's not going to switch today for sure.
You know that Keyshawn Vaughn's getting the workload tonight. But Leonard Fournette crocks the top 17 for all of us. I said crocks, not cracks. Although I really want a pair of crocs.
Field?
No.
This feels like a dad thing.
You guys sound like my wife. She's like,
right,
no, you don't.
I'm on Team Chapin on this one.
Yes.
All right. Well, I'm going to wear them soon. And you guys are going to be really
jealous.
You're
going to be in one of those commercials with, like, the how you know when you're your dad.
Yeah.
You know, when Sandra talking about parking.
Yeah. Becoming.
A book, read books about submarines.
Yeah.
You know? I think you guys are all being very unkind. All right. I'll reset here. Leonard Fournette cracks the top 17 for all of us here at ESPN in terms of our running back rankings for this week. And the reasons, I think, are fairly obvious. Not only is he playing a lot, last week we saw Leonard Fournette in 45 snaps. Ronald Jones played just 10. Giovanni Bernard got 16 as the change of pace back, Mike. But it's not just the fact that he's getting the opportunities. He's playing legitimately well right now, both as a runner and also as a pass catcher. He has earned what is so important when we talk about running backs with Tom Brady, the trust of Tom Brady.
Yeah, no question about it. And you are seeing it in the passing game. That's the key. He is seventh at running back in routes.
Amazing.
I mean, we didn't see that coming. We were really concerned about his passing game work when they brought in Gio Bernard.
Right.
But the thing is, Bernard's really only being used when they're playing from behind, right? They're trying to catch up with the Rams, so he gets, you know, 6, 7, 8 targets, whatever it was. Otherwise, they're the Bucs. They're winning often, so right, he's not on the field. So seventh in routes, targets, receptions, and receiving yards among running backs this season. He's only 21st in carries, not even in the top 20. It's really the passing game work that has bailed him out, and it's worked. 15th in fantasy, put 17-plus points each of the past two games. And now check this out. The Eagles have faced the fourth most running back touches this season, right? So you have to kind of consider that. But they're allowing 161 scrimmage yards per game to running backs. And again, he's handling a bulk of the workload. So, you know, the line is about 7 points, 6.5, 7 points. We expect the Bucs to be ahead in this game. Fournette's going to be out there on the field quite a bit. and they're giving up 161 yards a game. I mean, yeah, Fournette is, I think right now he's a lineup lock.
Yeah, good to see for him too, because it was an interesting start of his 2020 season last year, getting released by the Jaguars. He has made the most of this opportunity in Tampa Bay, and he'd have a home there for a little while. Yeah, still good, very young, which is crazy.
Very good situation to be in, of course.
No doubt.
Yeah, I mean, if you're getting 60-65% of the snaps into Tom Brady-led offense, good offensive line, I mean,
yeah,
it's hard to fail, I would say, in that situation.
Right. But again, counterpoint would be like Ronald Jones had that opportunity, could never seize it entirely in Tampa Bay.
I suppose, yeah. I feel like if Jones just got that opportunity, if you give him 15 carries a game and maybe 2-3 targets, I think he would look pretty good out there.
But also, pass protection, fumbling, things like that, that are the difference between keeping the job and potentially squandering
Completely fair. Yep.
Let's talk about the wide receivers for a second in Tampa, and then we'll discuss Gronk's health. We're going to talk about Mike Evans, or excuse me, you can read about both Mike Evans and Antonio Brown further in the wide receiver cornerback matchup column produced by Mike Clay. It's outstanding. It's up every single week on ESPN+. But we'll start with Chris Godwin, Mike. You and I have him second amongst our Bucs wide receivers. 19th for you, 19th for me. Like the outlook for Mike for Chris Godwin this week?
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously a must-start. I feel like right now all three of these guys are must-starts, and we'll explain why as we work through this. But 14th in fantasy points this season, 4 top 30 weeks, number one in pass routes. Number one in pass
routes.
Chris Godwin is number one in pass routes among wide receivers, 11th in catches this season. So, but here I think is our opportunity to talk a little bit about this Eagles scheme. Again, the Eagles defense, number one in zone coverage so far. They run a lot of cover 2, 3, 4. That means that, you know, you have safety help for these corners. They're not just one-on-one and man up against these wide receivers. And I think that's going to be important in this situation. In fact, if you look at Godwin and Evans and Brown so far, what they've done this season comparing their man versus zone production, they have been better against man. So that's interesting. You know, it doesn't mean that they're definitely going to fail, but it's interesting thing to look at. And the zone has worked for the Eagles. Again, fourth fewest fantasy points to receivers this season, the fewest to the perimeter. That is where Evans and Brown primarily aligned this season. And, you know, I touched on this earlier, Field. 48 fantasy points allowed to Tyreek Hill earlier this season.
That seems bad, yeah.
Crushed by Tyreek Hill. He just had their number. He beat the zone. He crushed them. They allowed 16 to Deebo Samuel. Had a decent day. That's fine. No other receivers over 10 points. And it's not like it was easy. It was Calvin Ridley, CeeDee Lamb, Amari Cooper, DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson. None of those guys got to over 10 points. So they've done a really good job other than Tyreek this season. Atlanta, San Francisco, Dallas, and Carolina receivers all as a group were under 11 catches on 126 yards. So, I mean, I hear what you're saying. They've been kind of up and down a little bit. At times they look poor, but overall, I mean, they have done a really good job, somewhat quietly, a really good job, and it speaks for itself. They've had the fewest fantasy points to, or the fourth fewest fantasy points to the position this season. So I think it's a really intriguing matchup tonight.
Okay, you should go on Philadelphia and radio and espouse the praises or the virtues of the good Eagles defense. See how that one
plays out.
Well,
I mean,
that
was bad after the, I mean, it looked bad 2 weeks ago, but yeah, it did. I mean,
Stefania, quickly on Chris Godwin. It sounds like he's managing a little something right now.
Well, you know, I think this is one of those opportunities where it's good to explain that the injury reports are a little bit nuanced. And as opposed to if you just look at the injury report and you saw, hey, Chris Godwin was listed every single day and might have had a Q by his name at one point, it would make you nervous. But here's a few things. Number one, when they came out of last week's game, there was no injury reported for Chris Godwin. Number two, they didn't practice at all this week. But remember, you need to be listed on the injury report even if you're receiving treatment. He's got two body parts listed, knee and ankle. If he has soreness, which you might expect, and it's a short week and he's getting treatment, they're going to put him on the injury report. He was listed as limited. These are estimations, again, because they didn't practice for Monday and Tuesday, upgraded to full on Wednesday. So there's no question about his availability, but it's just a chance to make people feel a little bit better if they were nervous seeing that earlier in the week.
No nerves surrounding Chris Godwin. Now let's get to the other two wide receivers, Mike, who there is a wide receiver cornerback consideration for both Mike Evans and Antonio Brown, who each have multiple top 11 finishes at the position this season. Mike Evans caught everything in sight last week. He was tremendous. He is what he is. He's a touchdown maker, right? He is really, really good in that regard. And then Antonio Brown is good for an occasional breakout game, also like last week. So tell us more about the matchup against Philly.
Yeah, it's interesting. And as mentioned, Brown and Evans are the perimeter guys here, right? That's where the Eagles have been strongest so far. So keep that in mind. But still, I mean, Brown, Yes, two top 11 weeks, two outside the top 30. So he's kind of what we thought he'd be, right? He's third in line here at wide receiver, but he's going to be boom bust. The reason that I feel like you have to start him is because the highs are so high, right? When he gets going and he's the open receiver, he has a great connection with Tom Brady. So he's exceeded expectations in that department. Also, targets probably a little bit closer than I expected. Four games together between these three. Evans, 35. Godwin, 34. AB, 29. So again, still third in line, but in the vicinity of the other two guys so far. Mike Evans, four straight games with 15-plus points. I mean, like you said, he's second in routes. Godwin's first. He's second. I mean, they're on the field a ton. They're running a lot of routes. They throw the ball. Evans is third in air yards as well. Has, four touchdowowns. I mean, when you're 6'5", 6'6", you're almost always going to score a lot of touchdowns. That's been the case with him almost every season of his career.
And nine targets a game this year from Mike Evans. It was 6.8 last year. So you're talking about what? Do a little math there. That's nearly a third extra targets this year for Mike Evans. Good offense, good player, great things can happen. You know, the Antonio Brown situation, Mike, is just one where it sort of defies any logic in fantasy football for us, right? Like, there's no indicator, really, of the week in which Antonio Brown's going to go nuts versus the week in which Antonio Brown's going to have three catches for 32 yards, right? Mm-hmm. I haven't found... Didn't this used to happen all the time with... Was it like LeGarrette Blunt? I feel like there was a running back who was always like, every time you thought the stars aligned, the player struggled. Mm-hmm. Every time it looked bad, the player went just had a great, great week. Antonio Brown is not quite... exactly like that, but I don't know Antonio Brown's going to be great, but I know that if I'm in a matchup where I'm playing against a top team and mm-hmm. I need some upside and my options are Antonio Brown versus insert other player here, most often I'm going to lean towards Antonio Brown as my pick.
Yeah, absolutely. That reminds me of Nyheim Hines too, right? Like, you have like three straight bad games and you're like, all right, no way. Two touchdowns, like clockwork, which sets up this week. I mean, they should be ahead of Houston, yeah. But... you know, naturally, he's barely touched the ball the past few weeks, right. And four out of five games this year. So here comes the two touchdown game. He's been doing this for years. Yeah. It's good things happen
when he touches the football. Yep. Stefania Gronk, we've teased it a couple times. Gronk has missed two straight games. Will tonight be a third?
Yes, Gronk has already been ruled out for the game and listed as a non-participant in practice again. They didn't actually practice, but he would not have practiced had they done actual practices. One note on Gronk, this will be his third straight missed game since suffering these multiple rib fractures, and what we found out was also a lung injury. Now, normally we say it takes about 6 weeks for a fracture to fully heal. We know that players often come back from rib injuries prior to that 6 weeks. Usually around 4 weeks, you can see evidence on imaging of bone starting to repair itself. One thing in Gronk's case, when you have a lung injury, sometimes it means there's a fracture that potentially is what contributed to the lung injury. And if they want to make sure that there's adequate healing before returning him to contact, we're coming up on that 4-week mark. So I think it'll be really interesting to watch next week. Obviously, with it being an earlier game in the week, I didn't really think he had a chance this week. But let's see what happens next week. It'll come down to, number one, do they think it's medically safe for him to participate in contact? And number two, pain tolerance, which we know Gronkowski has plenty of. He's proven that over the years.
You know, a lot of people always ask or are asking, like, if he's going to miss three games, why wouldn't you put him on IR? Well, first of all, you don't know. Second of all, like, sometimes you don't need to put a player on IR. Like, you may not have somebody else that's an obvious elevation candidate, especially in today's NFL when you can bring up a player, two players, actually multiple players, week in and week out from the practice squad. So the Bucs hope to have Gronk back in week 7. We'll find out if such is the case. We will discuss the Philadelphia Eagles, Mike's favorite team, in just a moment. But first, a word from our friends over at Captain Morgan. As this episode is brought to you by Captain Morgan. NFL fans know, as the season gets underway, you got to have the right players for all 60 minutes to bring that spark. Coming out of the draft, football fans know how hard it is to add to the right players that provide some excitement and spark to the team. And sometimes you got to sub someone in to switch things up. Same thing goes for that drink in your hand on game day. So if you're looking to sub in for something more refreshing, reach or pour yourself a delicious, crisp Captain Morgan Original Spiced Rum and Ginger. Sub in the captain, Captain Morgan, the official spice rum of the NFL. Visit CaptainMorgan.com to find Captain near you. Drink responsibly. Captain Morgan Rum Company, New York, New York.
Do you own or rent your home?
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys serious? You gave me the Geico read.
Sure, you guys do. I'll bet it's real hard work, huh? But you know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around the house. So go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
All right, we're back, and we're talking about the Philadelphia Eagles now. And Jalen Hurts, number 7 for the ESPN ranks. And Mike Clay's ranks. Mm-hmm. And my rank. Here's a fun fact for you, Mike. You ready for this one?
I'm ready.
With 213 passing yards tonight, Jalen Hurts would become the first player in NFL history with at least 2,500 passing yards and at least 500 rushing yards in his first 10 starts.
Wow.
Pretty unique player.
Absolutely. And, you know, sometimes you have a quarterback who comes in, a young quarterback that can scramble. You have design runs, adds a lot of production with his legs, and that's a run. They call and design a run-heavy offense. That's not the Eagles. They're an extremely pass-heavy offense.
They are very.
You know that if you have Miles Sanders on your team, we'll talk about that shortly. They are an extremely pass-heavy offense. They're putting the team in his hands for better or worse, and at times it looks like a great plan, other times it doesn't. But at the end of the day, I mean, for a second-round quarterback, remember, he only has a handful of starts in this league. He has done a really nice job.
So it's interesting. I think for fantasy, it's really not a conversation. Jalen Hurts is a star, right? Like, he has a lot of avenues to get there. He's an excellent runner.
Yep.
Not afraid to throw it deep and can throw it very effectively deeply as well, Mike. The conversation about whether he will be the answer for Philadelphia long-term is a separate kettle of fish that we don't have the time to get into right now. But for the Eagles right now, and as far as your fantasy lineup is concerned, he's unbelievable. He is legitimately. He is the only quarterback who has been a top 12 option all 5 weeks, and he has two top five. He's ridiculous.
His floor is 21 points so far.
It's
he has
absurd.
Not fallen below 21
points. By the way, he was at like 1 point last week until like the second half, and then just turned it on, dropped to 21-something, as you said.
We saw it with like Lamar Jackson, too, just going off in the second half. Unreal.
So you discussed how the Eagles are the opposite of a run-heavy team, and that has direct consequences to Miles Sanders, who is one of the more confusing players right now in fantasy football, Mike. He's still playing a good amount. He's just not being utilized that much.
Yeah, you got it. 67% of the snaps. I mean, if you knew in draft season he was going to play 67% of the snaps, I mean, you're in. He would have gone two rounds earlier than he did. That's a great sign. But the problem is not enough usage. 9.6 carries and 3.8 targets per game. He had a top 30 fantasy week in week one. That's it. He doesn't have another top 30 since that point. I thought this was incredible. I was looking at his stats from last week's game, and I thought it was a mistake. Like, I thought, you know, the stat feed has an error. He had 5 targets. He had negative 32 air yards.
That's amazing.
So if you're wondering why he had 5 catches for 6 yards, that's why. I mean, everything was way behind. It was screens that weren't working. I mean, it was just a mess. So here's the thing about this week, too. If we know anything about this Bucs defense, it's that they shut down the run. I mean, they are outstanding in that department. 3.0 yards per carry to running backs this season. That is second best. They've only allowed 198 rushing yards to that position. That is fewest in the league. But on the other hand, they have allowed the most running back receptions this season with 42. They allowed 24 plus fantasy points to Myles Gaskin and Cordarrelle Patterson. That's interesting because perhaps, you know, we saw that last week with the 5 targets. Maybe Gaskin gets going a little bit in the passing game. We know Kenneth Gainwell plays in that role as well, which makes you a little nervous, but there's at least an opportunity in the passing game for Sanders to make up for it. It's not just a straight-up benching because you know he's not going to run much.
That's actually what I just want to ask you about, because when I watched last week, when I watched the Eagles, I feel like Kenneth Gainwell was out there making plays for that team, especially in the passing game. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, you know, from that perspective, obviously you've got to be able to limit Sanders a little bit because Gainwell is definitely involved as a back there. It's not just like he's a guy that's back there not getting touches.
Yeah, I think he's a good player, and it helps to play 1/3 of the snaps too. I mean, you have Sanders out there pass blocking and, you know, running between the tackles. Gainwell comes in and he's full of, you know, young energy and running around against nickel and dime defenses. That helps his cause for sure.
All right, so this may come back and bite me in the butt. This reminds me, the comment you just made, I think, is so pertinent to the conversation surrounding the Cowboys running backs.
Yes, I was thinking it too.
Everybody
before I even
is
said
always,
it.
Hey, Tony Pollard's better than Zeke. No, he's not. Okay, give me a break. If you maybe like, he has had big games before. Okay, there's no doubt about it. And he is shiftier. He's probably faster at this point. He may be a little bit more elusive in the open field. But if you gave him the touches that Zeke got, I really, truly, in my heart of hearts, believe that the difference would be noticeable, right? Zeke is grinding out tough physical runs. And I know people will tell you you don't need to establish a run. And that's true in a lot of ways. But as Chargers head coach Brandon Staley aptly noted a few days ago, the components of a physical running game may be more intangible than tangible. Maybe like not quantifiable versus quantifiable. You wear that defense out. He was talking about it like that defensive line is getting punished on those physical runs when you're picking up 5, 6, 7 yards a carry. So that's a tangent. We'll talk about Kenneth Gainwell here for a second, Mike, because I'm with you. Like, he's an exciting player. He's an intriguing player. But it's clear for right now for fantasy, like if you're playing him in your lineup and it works out, it's because you got lucky. Mm-hmm. It's not because of the process versus the results, right?
Yeah, no question about it. He's one of them guys that's just going to spike occasionally. Maybe he just falls into the end zone. You have a lot of players like that. I mean, this game, I mean, if there is a game script, right, or if there's a game situation where you want to use him in your flex, this is probably it, right? Because if they're trailing and you can't run the ball, so you're going to use your running backs in the passing game, which I would imagine that's their game plan this week, right? We're not going to run between the tackles against Sue and Vea. Like, you're not going to do that. It just doesn't work. No one else does it. They don't run the ball. You would be designing plays to throw the ball to the running backs. And we've seen him flash in that department a little bit. So if you have Miles Sanders, you're hoping he's the guy that gets those touches. And maybe there's a pass interference in the end zone and he gets a 1 yard touchdown. That's what you're kind of hoping for. But he's still a superior option to Gainwell.
By the way, Gainwell's definitely having a big night tonight because I just said that about being lucky. No Lavonte David for the Bucs, which also helps the running backs in the passing game.
Oh, yeah.
Devontae Smith, let's talk about him, Mike. He also appears in wide receiver cornerback matchups on your column. And as we know, right now the Bucs do basically everything well except play cornerback right now. They're super thin.
And part of that is injuries, right? Part of it is heavy volume because they're winning all the time, so teams are just attacking them. But the injuries are, you know, they've been at times down their top three corners. So now they're down two of their top three. Jamel Dean's back, but they're down Sean Murphy Bunting since week one when he got injured, their slot. And then now they're down Carlton Davis, who's their best corner. So obviously big problems there. Second most fantasy points to receivers this season. Most receiver targets faced and receptions allowed. 7 touchdowns. They've actually been efficient. 7.7 yards per target is 6th lowest. So they've been efficient in that department. They're not allowing a lot of on a per play basis, but they face so much volume that it's been a problem. Check this out. The opposing number one receiver against the Bucs this season in 4 of 5 games is 17 plus fantasy points. The exception was Miami, who was missing two of their top three wide receivers. Parker wasn't there. Fuller wasn't there.
Sure.
So,
and Gesicki had a decent game, and Miles
Preston
Gaston
Williams
had
like 60 yards. But again, the other games, Devontae Smith, of course, is the Eagles' number one in this game. 23% target share. It's in the 7-8 targets a game sort of range. 41% of their air yards have gone to Devontae Smith. So he had 2 big duds in weeks 2 and 3. He's been top 27 every other week. By all indications, he should be locked in the lineups this week.
Big day, hopefully, on tap for Devontae Smith. Let's continue his chemistry with his quarterback, Jalen Hurts. But the Eagles might not have one of their tight ends available tonight, Stefania. What can you tell us about Dallas Goedert?
Yeah, Dallas Goedert was placed on the reserve COVID-19 list. He is vaccinated, so he needs 2 consecutive negative tests in order to return. But could be a big night for Zach Ertz.
We'll find out by about 4 p.m. if Goedert is available tonight for the Eagles. Mike, if he's not, Zach Ertz, there's got to be some space between, like, you like him versus he's a lineup lock. Like, what is he? He's not a lineup lock. We've seen this.
He's 8th on my board. I mean, right now, 8th, if he's 8, your tight end 8, he pretty much is
a lineup lock. Yes.
Once you get to, like, 13 and 14, you're like, what am I doing here? Yeah, like, like, David and Njoku now, you're just like, do I have to start him now? Yeah. Like, it's a mess. So, look, he had back-to-back top 12 weeks before the dud in week 5. But he has played 2/3 of the Eagles snaps with Dallas Goedert this season. So he's playing a big role, 6+ targets in 3 straight games. And the Bucs have allowed the 6th most fantasy points to tight ends. A lot of targets, they've allowed 15+ fantasy points to tight ends in every game this season. And Jack Stoll is going to be the number 2. I don't think anybody just listening right now has heard that name before, unless you're an Eagles fan, would be the number 2 if Goddard's out. It's going to be Ertz, and he should be able to see 6 to 8 targets, maybe more, in this game. So if I have Ertz, or he's on waivers and I need one, I would have a hard time not starting him this week. And I'll put you, I'll put you on the spot now, essentially, just kind of a little speculation here. What do you think? I mean, again, Ertz is out there in a lot of leagues. We talked about this on Fantasy Football Now on Sunday. I feel like he should at least be on benches, because if the Eagles lose a few more games and we get to the trade deadline, I mean, the Eagles were apparently at least talking to the Vikings about trading Dallas Goedert there before the season. Do you think that could happen here? It doesn't seem like he doesn't seem happy with contract negotiations. I almost wonder if they can move him, and if they do, that'd be good news for Goddard's fantasy stock and for Ertz.
Really? I thought you were going to say, do you think they're going to trade Zach Ertz? And I think at this point, the Ertz trade speculation has appropriately sort of simmered down. That's interesting on Dallas Goedert. You know, I think Philly's probably going to say to themselves, like, we're not really in the business of trading away good football players right now, because especially a young one, because they have this weird sort of imbalance on their roster. Mm-hmm. They've got a bunch of guys like Brandon Brooks and Lane Johnson and Brandon Graham who are older, established, solid vets, and then some young, intriguing pieces like a Jalen Hurts and a Devontae Smith and Dallas Goedert. And the sort of the middle spot is where they're a little bit, I would say, weaker. I don't know. It's an interesting thought. And Goedert is one of the rare players. Like, I'm expecting a relatively quiet trade deadline, because most of the teams mm-hmm. that would be looking to trade are good and don't have much cap space. Dallas Goedert is not expensive, right? Like, the idea of trading, like, I know people wonder if OBJ will get traded. It's possible. Mm-hmm. It also is going to have to take probably a team moving some money around, and teams prefer to do that during the offseason, not during the season when you have fewer chips to play. So, interesting thought there.
Name to watch, though. Because, again, he made a comment before the season about talking about contract negotiations, said the Eagles decided to go another direction, right, which was interesting. So, I don't know. Just put it this way. It would not shock me. And if that happens, the moment you or Adam or somebody tweets that out.
Or you.
No, not me.
Martellus Bennett 2.0.
Yeah, what, 10 years ago?
So anyway, Titans were number 88.
The second that drops, yeah. I mean, everyone's going to be, I got to get Ertz. Ertz is the guy. Everybody's going to talk. He's a tight end one lock. So,
good thought.
I mean, he's playing decent right now in fantasy. He's kind of hanging on that tight end one radar. And if Goddard gets moved or gets injured, you know, he's going to have a lot of value.
Let's pick this game. I'll go with the Bucks. I feel high scoring feels appropriate to me. I'm thinking like 31-22.
Yeah, we're pretty close. I'm 29-22 Bucks. Remember, okay. I gave my fan answer earlier, which is Eagles by 50. Objectively, it's Bucks 29-22.
Stefania, who are you taking?
I'm going to go with the Bucks.
Okay, Stefania takes the Bucks. And Daniel.
You didn't even go with the Eagles. Like, what are you talking about? I at least go with my team. You
that's
know,
fair.
I'm
that's
a better
fair.
Fan, Mike.
I'm going to take the Bucks 41-30.
Okay.
41-30. Wow. 71 points?
Yeah, it's going to be a fun
that's
game.
That's like 20 points over, I think the line's like 52 or something, isn't it?
Daniel, hey, you know what fun. Happened the last Thank time you. I doubted Tom freaking Brady, Mike Clay?
No, what know. Happened?
It's just, it's not a, it's
it never
a,
works, I guess.
It's like a rhetorical question, obviously, okay. You guys. Come on.
The over-under is 52.5. I did not know that until Kyle texted me that right now. My score 31-22 is 53. So I'm taking the over.
There you go.
Not
the over. Right.
That's
everything on the over.
Brag.
Yeah. Yeah. No, no, that was just Kyle being smart enough to realize those things. All right, let's get into some wide receiver cornerback matchups, the upgrades and the downgrades. And for that, we turn to nobody better than Mike Clay. And last week, Mike, I sat there and I'm telling you, I was like, the Steelers made your wide receiver downgrades, and then Cortland Sutton went crazy. And Tim Patrick went crazy. Mm-hmm. They play the Seahawks on Sunday night. Yes, it's Geno Smith and not Russell Wilson, but are you still confident in these two Seahawks wide receivers?
Yeah, it is tricky without Russ. And by the way, it's funny. I think after the first quarter, Patrick and Sutton had like one combined catch.
Yes,
and
very quiet.
I started to get the social media tweets. Everybody, you know,
turn your mentions
How could you doubt the Steelers?
Turn off, bud.
But anyway, that changed pretty quickly because both of those guys ended up having big days. So look, same scenario here, right? You had Patrick and you have Sutton on the perimeter against Joe Hayden and James Pierre. Now you sub in DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. Upgrade button, right? You're talking about an even better duo here. Obviously, the quarterback situation is another story, and we're downgrading the offense for that, but we're, again, maybe that'll be offset at least for this week by this matchup. Let's go through the numbers. Steelers, third most fantasy points to receivers. Fourth most to the perimeter. We were just talking about that. That's the outside receivers. Fifth most to the slot. So you'll see a little Metcalf and Lockett inside at times, about a quarter of the time. That's an area the Steelers have struggled as well, have had some injuries at that spot as well. Steelers defense, top five in targets, receptions, and touchdowns with 9 allowed to receivers this season. They've allowed 22 or more fantasy points to 4 different receivers this season and 10 plus to 12 receivers. And that's in only 5 games so far this season. They've also allowed the most fantasy points to left perimeter receivers. That is the side that DK Metcalf leans. So he actually gets the biggest upgrade in this matchup.
Mike, I said this yesterday to Matthew. He's like, I have Tyler Lockett inside my top 10, and it's only because he feels like he's due.
He's due.
You know, two strong games and then three not so strong games. And do you know, so my quick take right after the injury was Russell Wilson to Tyler Lockett down the field. It's one of the prettiest things in football, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's an exceptional skill.
That
both
rainbow
of those
throw.
Players. Yes.
That
he's
just
one
drops
of the best,
right into his hands.
Probably the best deep ball thrower and one of the best, if not the best, vertical pass catchers in the NFL. So I think that there's less upside because of that reason. But Tyler Lockett is not simply a deep ball catch, you know, deep ball receiver. He can do a lot of stuff that's not throwing the football 50 yards in the air as well. So mm-hmm. I'm optimistic there. However, you just mentioned that Courtland Sutton had to kind of rev the engines for the first half, maybe even three quarters last week, and then he finished off in a major, major way against the Steelers. Are you confident this week against the Raiders?
Yeah, not as much, certainly. This is a tough matchup, but Casey Hayward kind of fell off a little bit last year, right? We used to talk about him all the time as a tough shadow coverage matchup. Play kind of fell off, had some injuries. I believe he missed the last month of the season or so, but he goes to the Raiders now. He's, you know, with Gus Bradley, who's the, you know, obviously a lot of Chargers moved over to the Raiders in the offseason, and he's had a big bounce back. I mean, he's played terrific ball, and he has shadowed at times, didn't against the Chargers and Bears, but did against Sammy Watkins, Chase Claypool, and all perimeter routes against Jaylen Waddle a few weeks ago as well. Sutton, you know, he has been kind of all over the map, right? Two top 10 fantasy weeks, including last week, single digits in the other three games this season.
Yeah, three out of the top 50.
Yeah, so that's rough for sure. And now you put him in this situation where it's a tough matchup. Also, he's only in the slot 15% of the time. Now, Casey Hayward, throughout his career, has really never gone to the slot. He's not even going to dodge him that much. You know, sometimes it's a saving grace. A guy will be in the slot a third of the time, and he'll get away, and that's when he's heavily targeted. We've seen that with, like, DeAndre Hopkins when he's shadowed by Jalen Ramsey or something in past years, right? That's an avenue to still have a decent fantasy day. We're not really going to get much of that with Courtland Sutton. And by the way, even if he's not shadowed, because it's not 100%, right? It's been on and off for Hayward. The Raiders have allowed, you know, you might surprise people, the fifth fewest fantasy points to receivers this season, the second compared to expected, and the third fewest to the perimeter. So shadow or not, tough matchup for Courtland Sutton.
I don't know that this stat that Kyle provided is as much about Casey Hayward as it is just the Raiders secondary in general. Mike Williams, one of the best players in fantasy mm-hmm. this year. Keenan Allen, always a great player. And then Allen Robinson, who's had a slow start to the year, but still very talented. They combined for 21 targets in their games against mm-hmm. the Raiders. 79 yards, zero touchdowns for those three guys. So again, that's not all Hayward, but maybe it's at least reflective of how that group is, despite some injuries and despite some, you know, inconsistent pass rushing, they still have gotten the job done for the most part against really good wide receivers. Let's do one more, Mike. And the Seahawks are about as down bad as it gets right now with cornerbacks. Mm-hmm. We saw it last Thursday night against the Rams. They had no answers for Robert Woods or Cooper Kupp. And they cut Trey Flowers this week, who at the beginning of the season was playing a lot, even starting
100%.
For them.
Snaps. Yeah. 100% of the snaps the first few weeks. Yep.
And now he's no longer with the Seahawks anymore. It's a sore spot, Mike. They have, I can't overstate this. For as great as they were, for as long as they were on defense, the way that they have shifted in the secondary is just mm-hmm. striking. I mean, Bobby Wagner still being one of the best players, period, in the NFL, and they've got some good front seven players in general. But in the secondary, there's one player who's making a lot of money. That's, of course, Jamal Adams. Mm-hmm. But you know, our friend Mike Sando covered this on The Athletic yesterday. Maybe it was a couple days ago. Excuse me. The way he's being utilized this year is not really playing to his strengths. Like, I don't know who scares you in that Seahawks secondary, and certainly none of the cornerbacks.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, their number one corner was a guy that was a former safety for the 49ers, DJ Reed, and they converted him to corner, played on the perimeter late last season, and that's when they started picking it up. You know, remember, they started off like this in the first half, picked it up in the second half, and he worked out. So he's their number one. But then they're, you know, Trey Flowers didn't work out. They traded for a Jags depth corner, Sidney Jones, who didn't work out with the Eagles either. He's a starter now. He's the guy that replaced Trey Flowers. So it has not worked so far. Jones is struggling. They've led the sixth most fantasy points to receivers, the second most yards to the position. They've allowed 194 plus yards to receivers in four consecutive games. That is rough. 48 plus fantasy points to receivers in three straight games. Teams just keep attacking, and that is exactly what the Steelers are going to do. You have, you know, the perimeter again. That's really where you want to attack here. Deontay Johnson, 91% perimeter. Chase Claypool, 81%. They're going to see Reed and Jones throughout this game. like both of them. Remember, no Juju Smith-Schuster, so their targets should just increase. They should be safe for 20 to 25% target shares, maybe 30% for Diontae Johnson. You know, he's, what is it, 10-plus targets in 14 of his past 16 games, something like that.
I think last week was one of the rare exceptions, though. Last week was this weird game. He had a 50-yard catch on the opening drive for a touchdown.
Yeah.
And then he had like two more catches the rest of the game.
It was bizarre for sure. You were definitely bailed out by that early score. But again, generally going to be heavily targeted, no Smith-Schuster. And if you're looking for a deep sleeper, we'll see if James Washington plays. I think what's going to happen is he's usually a perimeter guy. You're going to see them kind of moving around. You'll see a little Mar Johnson inside, Claypool inside, mostly probably Washington, but also Ray McCloud, especially if James Washington is out. McCloud could be one of those guys that out of nowhere catches like a 42-yard touchdown. So keep his name maybe in a, I don't know, man. This could be like a 24-team league or something. Maybe DFS is where you're looking here. But nonetheless, he may be their full-time slot receiver in this game.
What we're really doing is we're keeping Ray McCloud's name on our minds in case he catches one on Sunday night. And then what's going to happen is if he does, we're all going to tweet at Mike Clay NFL and say, Mike is the smartest guy at ESPN and it's not close. Maybe Stefania is. But still, the point is that if he does it, you're going to have all the good kind of mentions.
This is true. That's a good strategy. We got to do that more. Just pick out just them like random names.
Calls.
Like if Jack Stoll catches a touchdown for the Eagles tonight.
Right.
Be like, I've heard of that guy.
Yeah, Mike talked about him
like, for the first time.
Literally. All right, that's a good idea. Good strategy right there from you, Mike. Please go read the entire piece on ESPN Plus. It is great, Mike. Really helps make us smarter.
Before we depart that conversation, I'm sitting here listening and digesting. Sorry for the slow reaction, but I'm processing. You know, takes a bit. I'm a little slower than Mike Clay's like huge computer. But I'm thinking about Chase Claypool coming off a hamstring injury, and he looked really good. Like, he put up big points, right? But he only played about half of the offensive snaps. He's still listed on the injury report, and Steelers are pretty good about managing their players coming off soft tissue injuries. So I would think that would lend more support to the notion that somebody like Ray McCloud could have an opportunity, because even though Chase Claypool looked good when he was out there, I still don't know that he gets a huge bump in utilization with Juju out just because they're still controlling his activity.
Yeah, makes sense. Maybe a Pat Freiermuth breakout at some point, too. Ooh. He's kind of taken like over as the one in that offense. He's a little bit ahead of Eric Ebron. Maybe the targets start to follow that at some point.
Pat Freiermuth from the Brooks School. Thank you. Good call, Stefania. Let's get to a few rankings differences to finish off the show. And we sort of brought this up yesterday when we were talking about waiver ads and quarterback ranks, Mike, but I'll just position it to you. So by your rankings, you have Taylor Heinicke ahead of Aaron Rodgers this week.
That can't be right.
I know. And so what I told Matthew yesterday was that while I understand the thought process and the projection, if I have Aaron Rodgers on my team, and Taylor Heinicke is available, I am not going to advocate for picking up and sitting Aaron Rodgers. Hence, I moved Heinicke below Aaron Rodgers in my rankings. I feel like it's I just felt like it would be speaking out of both sides of my mouth if I did it the opposite way. If you have Aaron Rodgers, would you consider streaming Taylor Heinicke this week?
I think it's a toss-up. I mean, I have them back-to-back in my rankings, so it's not like there's this wide gap here. It's not something you must do. Certainly, you don't want to drop a good player and pick up Heinicke just to get him in to get what I'm projecting is like 0.1 points. But, I mean, think about this, okay? Just some explanation, because I know it sounds ridiculous to have it set up this way, but
no, it's not.
Aaron Rodgers has scored one more fantasy point than Taylor Heinicke this season, and Heinicke did not start the season as the starter. Ryan Fitzpatrick did, of course.
Hilarious.
Both have three top 13 fantasy weeks and two duds. Heinicke is seventh in expected points among quarterbacks. Rodgers is 16th, so the volume hasn't really been there. And then the matchup. I mean, he's playing the Chiefs. Most fantasy points out of quarterbacks, 28-plus in four straight. Rodgers is playing the Bears on the road. They've had the fourth most fantasy points, or fourth fewest fantasy points to quarterbacks this season. So that's the explanation. I mean, they've been similar in terms of fantasy production so far. Rodgers is not playing like he was last year. So, look, I know Rodgers will outscore him by 20 now, for sure. There's no question about it. But, you know, that's the explanation for why they're close here.
It's close. With quarterbacks, we're going to have this conversation every single. There's going to be somebody who's really close to the top 10, and we're going to have to explain this exact dynamic. What do you got, Daniel?
I got a social question from DJ who wants to know.
Gallo?
Would you, I don't think so.
If it's a Steelers question,
it's not a Steelers question. That's why I don't think it's from DJ Gallo. Heinicke or Sam Darnold for the rest of the season? Obviously, we don't know what's going to happen with Taylor Heinicke and Ryan Fitzpatrick, but curious.
Heinicke.
Oh, really?
Well, so I'm assuming your counterpoint's going to be that he could be back on the bench when Ryan Fitzpatrick returns. Okay.
Yeah.
I have to think about that one further. I get the sense, and Stefania, maybe you can chime in here.
I would say I don't think there's anything new on the horizon with Fitzpatrick, and certainly the nature of the injury that he had was serious enough that I would not be anticipating anything soon.
Okay. But, and here's what I would say is that, like, you might be – here's the reason why I would say Heinicke over Darnold is that let's say – and I am completely making up a number of weeks here. Let's say it's 6 more weeks minimum for Ryan Fitzpatrick, which given that there's been zero update and zero reporting, seems at least reasonable to think. That gets you to week 12. Mm-hmm. If for some reason Ryan Fitzpatrick – or not for some reason. If Ryan Fitzpatrick is healthy enough to come back, I can probably replace my quarterback again, whether it's going to Fitz or turning to somebody else. I think the upside of Heinicke over these next 6 weeks is probably greater than Sam Darnold, who had 5 rushing touchdowns in his first 4 games, and – he had a schedule made of pudding to begin the season, did Sam Darnold. I mean, the defenses they are facing, take away New Orleans, which obviously is a good defense, but like it is so ridiculously soft, I think, for Sam. Softer than I think Heinicke's has been.
Yeah, and I don't think it's very tough going forward either for Darnold, for the record. But nonetheless, that's the counterpoint, right, is that you have similar options you could pick up later. I think that if you're picking a guy and it's like, this is going to be my starter the rest of the season – and especially in like a super flex, if it's your QB2, you don't want to get stuck if Heinicke goes back to the bench. So that would be the case, you kind of laid it out for Darnold. And I would probably lean that way if it was my second quarterback in a super flex or my third, or if it was a guy I had to start all season. But you're right. If you know you're just spot starting for a few weeks and maybe it's a Russell Wilson replacement, then yeah, it's fine. It's fine to go Heinicke, especially this week with the matchup.
Let's try to get one more in here. And this is a Browns versus Browns question. You and I both have Kareem Hunt ranked ahead of Nick Chubb. Nick Chubb's a better runner. He is the busier runner for sure, Mike. This comes down to something that you were not on the show when I asked the question about what does one target equal fantasy-wise compared to one rushing attempt? Mm-hmm. And Kareem Hunt is simply getting more valuable fantasy opportunities than Nick Chubb, and that should maintain week over week over week. Because Nick Chubb is not getting really any passing game usage. Kareem Hunt gets plenty. Kareem Hunt is an incredible player in his own right. Like, I kind of think this could be how I approach the ranks for them many weeks for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I could totally see it. And the Browns have shifted back because late last season, they switched to a pass-heavy offense. I mean, they were run-heavy in the first half of the season, pass heavy in the second half, and they were throwing to Nick Chubb more too. So I thought that it might even out a little bit, like just sub him in and out. You could use them both in the run game and the pass game. That has not happened. They've gone back to a run heavy offense. And again, I'll do the same thing I just did with Heinicke and Rodgers. Hunt is the number 6 scoring fantasy running back this season. Chubb is 12th. Hunt is 4 top 16 weeks. Chubb is 3. Hunt is 21 targets, to your point. Chubb only is 5, which is a major concerning number. And if you're looking at expected points, again, this goes into your point about targets versus carries. Hunt is 10th in expected points at running backs. Chubb is 19th. So that's the resume right there for why we're leaning. All of those point toward Kareem Hunt.
Yeah, Dan, you go.
No, you go first.
No, I was just going to say, like, I made the point, and it kind of riled people up recently that, like, Nick Chubb is clearly one of the 10 best running backs in football.
Oh, yeah.
It's not even close. But for fantasy, he's going to need touchdowns to be inside that top 10. And touchdowns, as Mike will tell you, are the hardest thing to predict.
Yes.
Over, especially when it's very possible that the Browns get the ball down to the 2-yard line and Kareem Hunt's on the field and he gets the first shot at it, Daniel.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's not like Kareem Hunt as their pass catching back is like Tariq Cohen, right? He's a guy that's out there, you know, he can easily be a goal line back for them as well. It's not an easy swap because just like you're saying, he's going to get some work because he's the kind of guy that can handle that. Mm. So, you know, all that to say, I'm very glad that we're finally at this point where you guys are ranking Kareem Hunt above Nick Chubb.
Remember when Kevin Stefanski gave a shout out to fantasy football managers last year during the game? Remember that or not?
During the game?
Yeah, he was like all mic'd up and he was like, "Don't worry, fantasy football people, I got you here." I think he was given a goal line carry. I'll go dig it up. It was a great
That's
clip
awesome.
From last year.
I love it.
You know, for the Browns, like, they got a good problem, man. Like, if your two running backs are Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb, like, God bless you. Think about what some of the teams would do right now for one of those, just one of them.
How about another super sleeper, right? We keep the theme going. Demetric Felton. I mean, if one of those misses time,
he's fun.
Or maybe Kareem Hunt moves on at some point. You know, he looks like he might be a player.
An extension recently, by the way.
Yeah, well, whatever. Down the road, but
bless
anyway,
him. I'm wearing my Bless Him shirt today, and I want to shout out Jarvis Landry, who has returned to practice. He has a chance to play as soon as this Sunday. He is technically eligible. We'll update you whether or not he is good to go. And before he got hurt, he was looking great this season. He never misses time until this past three games. Would love to see him back on the field. The Browns, as we know, are sort of finding ways to manufacture passing yards. Would love to have Juice back on the field, Daniel.
All right, Field, I want to close the show out letting you know that we put up a poll as to whether or not you should get Crocs earlier today.
Okay, and?
I don't know if we have it set up as a graphic to be able to show, but I can tell you that officially, 68% of the audience believes that Field Yates should, in fact, buy a pair of Crocs.
No.
You know, I've never had them either. We should do it together.
We
should dive into this.
We
should go in together and try this.
What is wrong with you?
They're maximum comfort. Have you guys ever worn a pair?
No.
I have not. I have not, actually.
You know what? This reminds me of someone. Someone told me this one time. Someone, first person I ever met.
My mom. She's 80.
Of course, because she's great. You know what? Someone told me this one time. I remember somebody said, hey, have you ever had ketchup on potato chips? And I said, that's disgusting. Absolutely not. No way would I ever do that. And they said, don't knock it till you try it. And I tried it. One bad. Don't knock them till you try them, Stefania.
No, you are such a fashion plate. And I really am not, I'm not sure I'm comfortable with
you. Well, sometimes you got to get maximum comfort, right? Like you're walking the dog in the morning, you wake
up. I'm all about comfort.
Okay, yeah.
Flip-flops, I got them.
But right now, like it's, this is the time of the year where in New England when you wake up, even if it didn't rain overnight, it cools down so much.
Yeah,
the grass is nice and wet.
Totally. You don't want to have. You know what you are? You're about to be a dad.
That's exactly true.
You are. It's like, you know, when you guys start nesting, you're turning into a dad. You're going to wear a cardigan sweater that's big and oversized with elbow patches.
Instincts are taking over right now.
With to match your Crocs.
Yeah, yes. I got some cargo shorts,
too, that I'm
going to
be wearing. And like Mike said, you're going to read about submarines.
I was going to say, I have a book. I want a submarine book for you.
So good.
I look forward to that. All right, we've run out of time. We've gone over our time, but the good news is that we are back on Friday. We will give you a preview of everything you need to know for week 6. Matthew will be back. Mike will not, but we appreciate Mike's efforts every single week, and he will be with us on Fantasy Football Now on Sunday. For Stefania and Daniel and Mike, I'm Field. Crocs rule. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Peace out.
If you need a stick of Tide, Field is your guy. If you're in Bristol or in Farmington, you should find another ride. Candidly, he hates Mike Clay, and you know that it's a fact. Every Yater's gonna Yate, 'cause he's on TV every day. A spicy tomato who's got the stats and tweets that'll make you laugh. He's our favorite host and everybody knows his name. He's Field Yates.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.